All right, everybody, and welcome back to the Grim Scenarios podcast side project. We're going to rank all the demons by strategic value now as part of our tier project. We've done the outsiders, we've done the minions. We're going to do the demons now. We're hoping to stick to a two-shot on the demons. If we can't get through all of them in two episodes, we'll figure it out. And then there's going to be, of course, the townsfolk and travelers. The townsfolk is going to be a big undertaking because there's like 68 of them. Which, at our normal pace of 10 to 12 characters per episode, will take us 5 to 6 episodes, maybe 7. So
we're hoping we can consolidate down some of the townsfolk into groups in various useful ways. We've got an idea, and we're gonna pilot some of that idea with what we're doing with the demons and how we've organized the demons a little bit. So we'll see how that.
Just some reminders for you all as you're listening to this. we have two, of course, Final 3 Con giveaways going. One is an art contest with entry directions on our Discord. That's discord.gg/grimscenarios if you're not a member. That one is open till the end of November. And we also have the podcast giveaway, which you submit by sending an email to our podcast email account, grimscenariospodcast@gmail.com, by December 6th. And for that one, we want a story about someone being kind to you in a game of Clock Tower.
Yep, sounds about right.
And with that, so as Milk said, we've been doing everything alphabetically, but we thought for the demons it would be helpful to start with the base three demons and go through them by script. So it's a little bit of a different order than we've done before, but it's a very similar concept.
And we thought we would do this in part because we want to get a baseline for what the strategic value of a demon is. You know, all demons, for the most part, and we'll talk about this later, all demons have killing power to an extent. And so that's something that's common to them all, just like minions doing minion things is common to all minions. Mm-hmm. So that... choosing who dies is a pretty important strategic element, but it's shared across all demons.
Yeah, I mean, and the ones that don't share it, particularly Legion, Leviathan, Little Monster, Yagababble, we'll, of course, talk about next episode. Everyone we're talking about this episode has some degree of killing power, even if the Zombul's killing power is a little bit low.
Yeah, and we expect, for the most part, everyone's going to be familiar with the base three demons. So as we kind of start to work our way through the strategic strength capability of the demons, it makes sense to start with the base three.
Yeah, though if you've only played Trouble Brewing, if you're not familiar with the Sex and Violence BMR demons, you should still listen to this episode.
We're going to talk about the imp.
We're going to start with the imp. The imp's ability is, of course, each night, choose a player, they die. That is the baseline demon, that is the sort of demon par excellence, that first phrase, each night, choose a player, they die. Most demons have that exact language in their text. Sometimes it's modified a little bit, sometimes it says something different, but that's the core of every demon. Most demons then have a special ability on top of that. The imp says, if you kill yourself this way, a minion becomes the imp. And in Blood on the Clock Tower circles, this has become known unofficially, but by everyone, as a star pass, which is a term that comes out of the roller derby scene, which I've not ever actually watched any roller derby, but my understanding is there's someone on a roller derby team who has the star, and they can pass that to another member of their team. And star is sort of the most important player. Whoever has the star is the most important player.
Yeah, let's go with that as a reasonable explanation of a star. And a star
if
pass.
If you know what roller derby star passes are, and I said it completely wrong, please feel free to correct me in the comments.
So, imp is the first demon that every player interacts with, but almost every player interacts with. Obviously, you know, maybe some people start on SMV or BMR or whatever, or on a TNC, but... imp is the, like, baseline demon, and it comes with something that is common on some other demons we're going to talk about today, which is creating uncertainty about the alignment of the players who have died. Because the Star Pass means that a player who dies isn't immediately confirmably good. Most of the time, players who die aren't are most likely to be on the good team. The Imp creates uncertainty around that, and it's one of the things I think that makes Trouble Brewing an amazing script.
Yeah. Now, when I'm thinking about demons, I like to group them in a bunch of different categories. And these categories in my mind are mobility demons, strength in numbers demons, and misinformation demons. Misinformation demons and multi-killers, rather. The Imp is, of course, a mobility demon. Its special power is that it can move who the demon is. So I think it's also worth considering the Imp in that context of as a demon that can change who the demon is throughout the course of the game. And, of course, as Milk said, creates some doubt on the reliability of players who died in the night.
It's especially important to have that mobility capacity, whatever you want to say. It's especially important to have that mobility on Trouble Brewing, where you have something like the Fortune Teller, who is essentially a demon detector, a really strong direct demon detector. You also have Empath, which is going to get reads on their neighbors and can detect the demon. And it's possible that the demon could be in a tough spot and need to get out of there. So on its home script, the ability that the Imp has to move doesn't just create that sense of, oh, I'm not sure if dead players are good or evil. It certainly is incredibly important, like mobility effect, to be able to get away from a really direct information ping.
Yeah. Now, I think with the Imp, talking with the Star Pass is talking about its strategic value, because that's what makes the Imp special, the ability to kill itself to move to another demon. So, Milk, how do you value that strategically?
Again, I'm going to think about it starting on Trouble Brewing and then maybe moving out to custom strips to some extent. It's going to depend on a couple of things. The first is, how trusted are your minions in the town? If a minion is more trusted than the demon, and the demon can surreptitiously get the information, get the role onto a minion, without town sort of suspecting that they've passed the star, it's pretty good. That's a very good thing. But the strategy comes into knowing when you should do that and when you need to hold on, whether it's for another day, whether it's just you just need to hold on and stay the Imp. So that's a piece of it. I think also, you know, crafting the information, and of course every demon is going to have to do this, but crafting the information is especially important for an Imp, because you can do it from the start, unlike some other mobility demons. You can set up to confirm one of your minions and then pass to them, and then surely that dead librarian is definitely pointing to a real butler, right? The Imp who passes to the minion is, you know, definitely a dead librarian who's confirming a butler, and that player is trustworthy.
Yeah. I think one thing that's important to think about with the Star Pass is that it's generally better to Star Pass a day early than a day late. And what do I mean by that? It's if you think you're gonna need a Star Pass and you're not sure when you should do it, I would err on the side of doing it a little bit earlier. The worst time to Star Pass is when the good team is considering executing between you and one other player, and you're able to convince them to execute the other player, and then you Star Pass. Because at that point, everyone's going to read it as a Star Pass.
Yeah. Another time, it's probably a little too late to Star Pass. I mean, you're going to do it anyway, but when you've been, like, tied off the block, when you've been on the block and then your team has tied the vote on you and the minions have added themselves, at that point, you can Star Pass, but it's probably...
And you probably should.
And you should, but it's not going to be super effective. Town's going to know it's a Star Pass.
your Star Pass is more effective if you can do it before, if you can anticipate it before the day where town is likely to start seriously thinking about executing you.
Think about it this way. You can think about it a little bit mathematically, right? Like, if town mostly thinks you're the demon, and you're probably likely to die tomorrow anyway, you're probably going to Star Pass, because it at least, if both your minions are alive, it at least takes it from 100% you dying and losing the game to a 50-50 that the town has to kill one of the minions.
And you protect your minions from having to socially protect you in town one more day to set up the to get you out of that jam.
Yeah, and that's the bigger piece of it. Making sure your minions are aware that you're willing to Star Pass gives them freedom not to have to socially protect you. We see this a lot, and this isn't the demon ability, but it's related in a sense, because it's off the same script. We see this a lot with Scarlet Woman, right? Where the Scarlet Woman can push on their demon. They don't have to be socially aligned with the demon. They don't have to be voting aligned with the demon. If you can make a non-Scarlet Woman minion able to do that, give them the confidence to do that and know that you're going to Star Pass if they, you know, if they kind of don't align themselves with you, that's really helpful for your team.
Yeah. Well, I do want to sort of flag a little bit on the imp's interplay with the Scarlet Woman. Not because, of course, we're trying to evaluate these characters to a degree independently, to a degree with context with the base threes on their scripts, but the imp and the Scarlet Woman have sort of a weird sort of relationship sometimes because of the redundancy between their two abilities. Both of them exist. Their ability is to move the demon. Generally, if you have a Scarlet Woman, it's better to let yourself be executed and for your Scarlet Woman to pick it up that way than it is to star pass to your Scarlet Woman. And that's just because of the simple math of the game.
Yeah. You'd rather good waste an execution than you spend a kill in the night. Yeah. Your team spend a kill in the night to move the demon.
Sometimes also it's important to understand, to realize that your Scarlet Woman's not in a great position to pick up the demon hood. Yeah. And on one minion scripts, on one minion games, 7 to 9 players, you don't really have a choice there. Your Scarlet Woman will of course pick up your demon hood, whether you star pass or get executed, because they're the only minion in play. However, in 2 and 3 minion games, you have a few ways you can get around the Scarlet Woman being sometimes a bit of a liability. One is you can simply murder them in the night, which I've seen work to great effect.
Yep.
But also, you know, if you can get yourself executed before your Scarlet Woman, you can let your Scarlet Woman do the Star Pass immediately after catching it. The Scarlet Woman can sort of treat it like the hot potato. They can take your execution and then immediately bounce it.
Yeah, that's extremely powerful, because moving the demon twice in one night is going to confound a lot of abilities.
So yeah, so you want to think about both. You want to have a good sense of when you're deciding whether to star pass or not, sort of where your Scarlet Woman is positionally. I think this is most of, like, the emphasis is super deep. The self-contained movement within the evil team is subtle and strong in a way that a lot of other mobility demons don't have.
It works really well. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. It works really well with a lot of bluffs as well. There's just a ton of bluffs that like for the player to die in the night.
Yeah, it works very strongly with a farmer bluff, with a ravenkeeper bluff, with a sage bluff, with a choir boy bluff. Not a choir boy, a king bluff.
It's great. It's great with any powerful information gathering townsfolk role, where you make your teammates look good in your information and then die on night 2 or 3, passing to one of your teammates. That information is going to look pretty correct.
So I'm gonna, you know, just take my grade on here. I think the imp goes straight to S tier. This simple little demon has just so much depth in how it approaches the game because of the ability to star pass. The ability to star pass seems simple, but it's ultimately, like, extremely high up there.
It remains one of my favorite tokens to pull, even throughout many, many, many games of Clock Tower. It always feels like I can do something with it. And even though I don't use the star pass function often, when I see the opportunity to use it effectively, it just does wonders. So I agree with Emma. Imp is an S-tier minion. I thought, you know, it's funny because I thought when we sat down to this, I was like, well, I'm going to want to put Imp in S-tier, and then Emma and I are going to talk about it, and I'm going to realize it goes in A-tier. I'm wrong. It goes in S-tier. It's got so much depth, and there's so many interesting plays you can do with the Imp token.
All right. We'll move on then, of course, to our Sex and Violence demons, starting with the Fangu. The Fangu is, each night, choose a player, they die. The first outsider this kills becomes an evil Fangu, and you die instead. Brackets, plus one outsider.
Another mobility demon.
Mm-hmm.
With a little twist. I think there's two or three things we should talk about the Fangu's ability before we get into the strategy proper. The first thing is, of course, you don't always have control over where you go, because you don't know the Grim necessarily. So sometimes the Fangu can end up on a player they didn't expect to go to. Thing number two is the Fangu creates an extra evil player, but it does not create an extra living evil player. It sacrifices an evil player's life to create a second evil player when the Fangu dies, which does give evil an additional vote. An additional dead vote, anyway, which can be powerful. And then on Sex and Violence specifically, Fangu is the one of the three demons that does not create misinformation.
It's the only one of the four demons.
Correct.
That doesn't create misinformation.
It is the only one, yeah.
Yeah. about that sort of... I think it's generally better for you as a Fangu to jump by mistake than to jump on purpose, and we'll put aside pit hags creating outsider targets for you to jump to. When you jump by mistake, it's because you didn't know that you were hitting an outsider, which means that the player is in a solid bluff as a townsfolk, which means if they realize it's Fangu, they're less likely to look at this outsider who was in a solid bluffing position. When you jump to someone who everyone knows is an outsider, you're more likely to get your new demon caught out if people realize it's a Fangu game, because that's the person everyone knew was an outsider. So as a Fangu, I think it's generally better to not try to jump, and if and when the jump happens, take it as the bonus.
Yeah, I agree with that. In addition to that, I think, you know, when you get your three bluffs as a demon, in a game with two minions, you know, in a 12 player game or 10 to 12 player game with two minions, it is natural for the demon to take a bluff and for each of the minions to take one of the bluffs. I think if you're a Fangu, you might want to save a bluff for the person you jump to. Especially if you jump early, they might be able to back into a different role.
Yeah.
That's my opinion, but I think it's a strategy that helps Fangus to be more able to survive post-jump.
Yeah, let one of your minions get in a double claim. It's fine. You can save one of your bluffs to, if you jump, you can give it to the player you jumped to. You can even then take their outsider role from them and claim you're the dead outsider of that role to make it seem like it's not a Fangu game.
Yeah, I really like that play, especially because it's going to create a world where if the other two outsiders do come out, there's going to be a too many outsiders situation, and it's at least something the town's got to figure out.
Now, I do think from a strategic perspective, for the purposes of the tier rank, and I think Fangu has to be below Imp. And that's because, unlike the Imp, who needs to, like, have a good enough read on the Grim to figure out whether they should try to move their demonhood or not, the Fangu is almost always advantaged by getting the extra evil over not getting the extra evil.
Yeah, that's right.
And I know I said earlier that the Fengu should not be trying to jump. I don't think these are inconsistent. You shouldn't be trying to jump because you should be trying to find an outsider who's doing a good job of blending in as a townsfolk. You shouldn't jump. You shouldn't go to the first outsider you heard of, because if you've heard of the outsider, a bunch of other people have probably heard of the outsider. But you do want the jump to happen. You do want to kill people who you want to be paying attention for, people whose information is wrong, because they're more likely to be outsiders. And then you can even start lining up your bluffs with information you hear that's wrong to sort of back up their worlds when you jump to them. But you want to find people who other players believe as a townsfolk, which means people you believe as a townsfolk. But you do want the jump to happen because an extra evil is incredibly powerful. And I think like that puts the Fengu on a little bit more of a single-minded track than the imp. With that said, however, there are some times where the Fengu's best option is not to jump. If, you know, all three outsiders in a 12-player game have outed as outsider, if people have solved that it's a Fengu game, just and they start wanting to kill the outsiders,
yeah,
like it's just leave them and see if you can skate by without jumping. But absent that situation, I think since the Fengu is much more single-mindedly trying to get that mobility, I think it should go down to A tier for now, lower than the imp, and we'll see if it stays there or moves even lower as we continue going through the demons.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think Fengu goes into A tier. The additional evil does make it very strong, but this isn't a strength rating, it's a strategic rating. Certainly getting that extra evil vote is very powerful, but the Fengu's not necessarily making a lot of choices about where that's going. Or maybe the strategy is in choosing not to jump to certain outsiders, but I do think that's a little shallower than the imp. Not saying it's not, not saying there's not a lot for Fengu's to do, not saying it's not an interesting role or an interesting strategy, just saying that I think the imp has more agency in their choices.
All right, next we move on to the Nodashi. The Nodashi is the Octopus of Demons, because that's what its token looks like. Or the Squid of Demons, because its token also looks a little like a squid. and its ability is, each night, choose a player, they die. Again, that same phrase we've seen from Imp and Fengu. And then its special ability is, your two townsfolk neighbors are poisoned.
So, Nodashi is going to benefit from Grim reading and figuring out where the poisoned players are quite a lot. And the reason for that is, you might have a minion next to you, you might have outsiders next to you, you might have a minion, then an outsider. You might have very long tentacles, very long extension cords reaching out to townsfolk. And the further you are from the townsfolk with misinformation, generally the better off you're going to be. The reason for that is that sometimes the misinformation, you know, towns solve out that there's misinformation, and they might try to track you down with that misinformation if they can figure out that it's a Nodashi in play. So a Nodashi benefits heavily from figuring out who they're poisoning and whether or not it advantages them to leave those poisoned players alive, to leave multiple poisoned players alive, to just kill off one of their poisoned players. There's a lot that goes into a Nodashi trying to maximize the output of their poison, utilize the output of their poison effectively, while simultaneously trying to hide themselves. I think it's actually a really fascinating balance that Nodashis have to strike there.
Yeah, that is the same like function I wanted to talk about with the Nodashi. I'm glad you got there. The Nodashi, like, its poisoning is a blessing and a curse. It turns off two townsfolk and lets the storyteller craft misinformation to help you, but it also creates sort of a neon light if people realize that these two players are socially good but spouting misinformation, that somewhere between them is a Nodashi. And as the Nodashi, a lot of your choices are going to be trying to figure out how greedy you want to be with generating the poisoned information from your neighbors, and when you want to turn it off to turn down the likelihood of your poisoned neighbors becoming a U detector.
We don't often talk about script writing on this podcast. We occasionally reference it or talk about characters that work and don't work well together. I do think if you're looking at custom scripts, be careful about putting mechanical roles on scripts where you expect there to be a high amount of Nodashis being put into the bag. Things like Virgin and Night Watchman, even Monk, those roles can be a gigantic spotlight on a Nodashi that's sitting near them. There's a ton of roles like that, but it's worth just thinking about that in the context of sort of what Emma mentioned about the Nodashi kind of being lit up by abilities not working nearby. Information is easier for the storyteller to use to benefit the Nodashi and hide from them, hence its, you know, base script being Sex and Violets, a script that has lots of information roles. Abilities are much harder for the storyteller and the town to hide malfunctions on.
Yeah, it's not great for you as a Nodashi if the innkeeper you're poisoning protects two players that night and you kill one of them, because the innkeeper is going to be like, huh, that's weird, I protected that guy. It's not going to be great if you're gossip something they know to be true. Your poison gossip something they know to be true to confirm themselves and get the kill, and the kill doesn't happen. It's not going to be great if the gambler, you know, gambles someone as a role they weren't claiming to be and lives. Because they're going to, again, be looking to their neighbors.
Yeah.
So you want to be very careful with mechanical roles in Nodashi, both in script building and for Nodashis. If you realize you're poisoning something like a monk or a gambler or a gossip, an innkeeper, a
get them out
night
of
watchman, you might want to just get rid of them. Make it a lycanthrope. Just get rid of them and make it hard for them to know that their ability is malfunctioning.
Something else I think is worth mentioning, that if you're a Nodashi and you've got a player that you're pretty sure you're poisoning close to you on one side, and you've got a player that you're pretty sure you're poisoning further from you on the other side, you may want to kill off the close one and then leave a sort of left-right directional question about where the Nodashi is around the other one that is, you know, not necessarily adjacent to you. That's not going to happen in every game. But, you know, if you're one or two seats away, especially if you're two seats away, if you're a couple of seats away from someone that you're pretty sure you're poisoning, you can kill them off once they are suspicious of that poison and make it look like one of their neighbors or someone closer to them or someone in the other direction from them is the Nodashi.
Now, I think we do have to sort of keep our pace going. We're going to have to move on from the Nodashi, which means it's time to put it on the chart. Milk, where are you thinking of the Nodashi going?
I was originally thinking it was going to end up in B tier, but I actually think there's a lot more strategic decision making that we've talked about here, and I'm inclined to move it into A tier.
Yeah. I'm not only inclined to move it into A tier, as we were going through this conversation, I was sort of thinking maybe we need to put the Fengu down to B tier, as we just sort of try to make sure these characters are tiered appropriately in relation to each other. I think the Nodashi is a little more strategically deep than the Fengu.
I think you're right there. I think the Nodashi really is a more challenging demon in a lot of ways, but when you understand what it's trying to do and what it allows you to do, I think you have a lot of agency and a lot you can manipulate in the game.
That brings us, of course, to the Vigor Mortis. The Vigor Mortis is a demon that's ability is each night choose a player, they die. Classic language there. We're learning it and we're loving it. We're learning it and we're loving it. And then its special ability, part of its ability, is minions you kill keep their ability and poison one townsfolk neighbor, brackets, minus one outsider. There's a lot going on with the Vig. A lot more than we've seen with any of the three other demons we've looked at so far. There's really, I think, almost four components to its ability, whereas the Fengu, the Fengu maybe had three, the Nodashi has two, and the Imp has two. The Vigor Mortis really has four components that I think you have to think about in terms of strategy. First is, of course, the standard demon choosing how to die. Second is this clause, minions will keep their ability if you kill them, and how to work that into your benefit. The third part is the poison one townsfolk neighbor aspect of killing your minions. So there's both the ability keeping aspect and the poison using your dead minions as misinformation generators aspect. That's three. And four is, of course, the minus one outsider aspect, which is something, as a big evil team, you really need to do your best to cover up.
Yeah, it's very important.
If you're on a Vigor Mortis evil team and there's supposed to be an outsider in play, i.e. it's a base one or base two outsider count, someone on your team should probably be bluffing that outsider.
Yeah.
In order to try to make it look like not a Vigor Mortis game and create non-Vigor explanations for misinformation.
When we talked about Fangu, we didn't really get into the plus one outsider aspect of the character. It's a setup ability. It doesn't really affect how the Fangu plays. You can't really control, like, making outsiders not claim their role to some extent, at least late in the game when it's likely that a Fangu's jumped. With Vigor, though, the minus one outsider component actually does add to the strategy of the character because it creates this void. Now, it's bad in the sense that town's going to get another townsfolk with which to do townsfolk stuff. But it's good because it creates a void where you can bluff an outsider. Now, the Vigor doesn't have to be the one bluffing an outsider.
It can be a minion.
It can be a minion.
I think particularly in the context of Sex and Violets, what I don't see Vig teams do enough is have a minion bluff Sweetheart, kill the minion off, and use the interplay between dead minion poisoning someone from the minion ability and the theory of the Sweetheart drunk could be out there to sort of ward off the Vig's natural enemies of Oracle and Mathematician.
We talked about this in the Sweetheart, when we talked about the Sweetheart as a bluff, and it's so good. It's so good. It just...
It's so synergistic with Vigor Mortis.
Yeah, like, not only are you poisoning someone, you're creating the world where a poisoning should have happened.
Mm-hmm. The Oracle got a one, not because your minion's Vigor killed, but because the Oracle got Sweetheart drunk. Like, I think this is one of the things that Vigs frequently misplay on, is they don't take advantage of how you generate the misinformation off the Vig kills. Which is either that they Vig kill a minion who isn't bluffing Sweetheart. And obviously you're not going to be able to get away with bluffing Sweetheart every time you kill... having your minion bluff Sweetheart every time you Vig kill them.
Of course.
It happens every time, then people start reading Sweetheart claims as Vigor Mortis minions, yada yada yada. So you don't want it to be universal, but you want that threat to be out there. You want that threat to exist. And the synergistic power of the Sweetheart bluff with the Vigor Mortis is super strong.
Now, Vigors do have a cost for their ability. And there's sort of two elements of the cost. The first is you're going to kill a minion. That minion's going to keep their ability, which is good, but you are killing off a nominator and a consistent voter, which is going to be to your disadvantage to some extent.
And even worse, your dead minion... A living minion is one of the most valuable things you can have in Clock Tower's demon. It's someone who is willing for you to be framed as a demon.
Yep.
Whereas a dead minion
isn't the demon.
A dead minion simply is not the person town needs to execute. Unless you pair Vigor Mortis with a Zombul, in which case, go wild.
Maybe you can frame them as a Fangu. There's some things
but then
there's, you can try to do.
They're still
there's
not,
outsider count issues, and it's just complicated.
And they're still not the person you're trying who's being willing to be framed.
Yeah.
Because if they're a dead Fangu, they're a dead Fangu. Like,
Yep. Okay. Yeah. And then the next part of it, of course, is while it's helpful to get that poisoning out there after you kill your minion, you don't have a ton of control over where the poison goes, and you might not necessarily know what you're poisoning. You might not have great poison options near the minion you want to kill, right? Maybe you want to kill the pit hag to keep the pit hag's ability in play, but if there's not a great townsfolk, excuse me, near them to poison, then killing that minion, you might just, you know, you might poison a spent artist or a, you know, a clockmaker or something.
Like, the big poison scales in powerfulness the earlier it happens, right? Because the earlier you get your big poison happening, the more likelihood that the storyteller is going to be to use that poisoning to your advantage. The more likelihood the artist hasn't asked their question yet and is a strong poison target. The more likelihood you'll get 3 days of poison flower girl information that the storyteller can use to craft a world framing two people who are voting opposite as you. the more likelihood that you get that powerful poisoning off. But that also means the more days you have to survive without your minion's nomination, vote, and willingness to be framed.
Yeah. So that's tricky. I think a lot of people see Vigor as a weak minion because of those limitations. But limitations don't mean you have less strategic activities. And there's a lot of pieces to the Vigor's ability that it really does have a lot of options and a lot of things to think through and work through as it's being played. You know, as you're playing the Vigor, you've got a lot of choices to make, especially in the first maybe 2 days of the game, you know, 2 or 3 days of the game. You really have to set yourself up for success. You really benefit from good Grim reading, like figuring out where the townsfolk you want to poison are and if they're, you know, if they're near a minion, what minion they're near. There's some little tricks with Evil Twin that you could try to pull off where, you know, you kill off a good twin or you kill off your Evil Twin minion and maybe town kills the good twin, you know, stuff like that. Those are just little tricks. They're not really strategy, but there's a lot that Vigor can do if you get into the different aspects of the ability.
I think that's all correct. And man, yeah.
Kind of talk myself into putting it in A tier.
Is every demon comes with its inbuilt saintness.
Yeah.
But, like, demons really are the generals on the battlefield for the team that's at a disadvantage numerically. Like, all these demons have a lot of depth to them. I think Vig goes in A tier, and we may even, I think, as we complete our demons and sort of continue reevaluating them, I think it's on A border to S.
Yeah, it's really deep. There's so much. It's a token I love to pull, too. Like, just the more I think about it, the more fun I have pulling Vigor because there's so many things to do with it. It's a challenge. Like, it's stressful, but it's fun, and there's a lot you can do.
I don't want to overload us on S tier demons to start. We can move things around once we've gotten more demons on the board and continue to think of how they fit relatively, like we sort of moved Fengu down when we realized we thought Nodashi was more interesting than it.
I think the demons are going to be the one that we move around a lot more as we add more to the table. I'm not sure we'll have them all settled until we get to the end of all the demons.
All right, next up is, of course, our final Sex and Violence demon, the good old-fashioned Vortox, the bane of people who refuse to execute on day one. I have trouble being fair about the Vortox. Oh, I should read its ability.
You should read the ability, and then we can both be unfair about the Vortox.
Each night, choose a player. They die. Townsfolk abilities yield false info. So that's part one of its special ability. Part two of its special ability is each day, if no one is executed, evil wins. It's the first demon we're going to look at, and I think one of just two demons that exist that has an alternative win con. That is, if the good team refuses to execute someone, you just instantly win the game. Now, as I was saying, I have trouble being fair with Vortox, because I love the Vortox. I think the Vortox is super fun. I think the Vortox makes games and scripts it's on better simply by existing. It takes away the inability of the good team to drag games out by refusing to make executions, which is some of the least fun stuff that can happen in games of Block God and Clock Tower, when just no one ever dies during the day and the game just gets dragged out. Vortox just eliminating those play patterns makes it, for me, one of the most fun demons to see on scripts, one of the most fun demons to have around. And it's one of the most fun demons to storytell as well for me, because when it's actually in play, when you have to generate that all false information in a way that's fair and helpful to the evil team, because it's an evil ability, but not so unsolvable that good can't unpack that it might be a Vortox game. Oh, I love this demon.
I'm with you. And I've just realized that, you know, I don't know why I didn't ever see it before, but each of the Sects and Violets demons, their greatest strength is also their greatest weakness. Because mm-hmm. the trick about Vortox is once town figures out it's Vortox, it makes it a lot easier to solve, right? When you know all the information is false, it's easier to sort of backtrack that and reverse it in a way that makes the demon easy to find. We talked about, you know, Fangu, their vulnerability, of course, is that they add an outsider and then, you know, try, you know, end up jumping to an outsider. And if that, then, you know, if that outsider's bluff isn't great, you know, but the benefit is, of course, you might get an extra evil player. Nodashi, the poisoning might point the good team back at you. Vigor, you have to spend a minion to get the poisoning and get the ability to keep going. Vortox has their ability to make all the information false is once again a double-edged sword. So it's interesting to me that all of these Sects and Violets demons act in this way, that they all, their biggest drawback is their biggest strength. And I really love that. And I think having to work around a disadvantage is what makes them interesting demons. I was never under any doubt that Vortox was going to go into S tier. Because absolutely, not even a question. It takes towns several days to get that sorted out. And the Vortox has to craft information that fits the world that they want the town to resolve. If they think town is going to solve out Vortox, they need to give Vortox information. If they think town is not going to solve out Vortox, then they're going to have to give out information that's beneficial to them, that's true. The Vortox figuring out how to turn the town to the side of whether it's a Vortox game or not is so crucial. And there's a ton of strategy in what bluff you choose, how you choose to go about presenting your information, when you reveal information, how you look good and reveal information without committing to one side of is it a Vortox game or is it not a Vortox game too early or too late. Like, all of those little bits and pieces they're fantastic, and they're a lot of fun. And most importantly for me, because this is one of my pet peeves about Clock Tower, it means that the evil team can't just sit there and wait and do nothing. The evil team has to create information in a Vortox game. The minions have to craft information. The demon has to craft information. You can't just sit there and wait it out for the town to figure out what's going on. You've got to be part of the solution and part of the problem. Preferably the demon is part of the solution and the minions are part of the problem, but, you know, you go either way.
The Vortox having to make that choice of whether to back up the Vortox world or try to undercut it, like, requires you to pay so close attention to what is going on in town, what information exists, what that information can be sold as true or false, and how to keep your information in line with where town is going to end up. Like, if it's a 12 nomination day and you're pretty sure a town crier is in play, you're probably going to need to start selling Vortox worlds, because the town crier is going to get a no when everyone nominated. Like,
there's other stuff too, right? Like, you need to find the Oracle and not kill them. Like, at least not on day one, you know.
Well,
like,
you're, or you
or you do kill them and then you sell that world. You know, it's like there's.
If the Oracle gets a one on day one, you need to start building your Vigor Mortis in Fangu worlds.
Yep, absolutely.
Right. Which can include, like, having your minions back into outsider claims if you need to sell a Fangu world. Vortox, if you need to sell a Vigor Mortis world, like, frame one of the outsiders.
Vortox is a demon that needs to know how every other demon on SNV... I'm just talking about SNV here. Like, we're not even moving off of SNV. that you have to know how every other demon on SNV would interact with the game state at every given moment. And then you have to think about how you're going to interact with it, how your role would interact with it. You really need to know the roles on the script very well. You need to know how people think about and listen to the information that's given out by those roles. It is hard, and it is very complex, and it requires a lot of thought, and it requires you to really get ahead of what everybody else in the town is thinking so that you can either pivot to or away from Vortox.
Yeah, and you said you wanted Vortox in S tier.
I do.
I didn't know where I wanted Vortox, but as I said, I love the thing, and if I'm not the one responsible for putting it in S tier, it can go in S tier.
Yeah, right. I think it's going into S tier. I don't see how it could go anywhere else. You have to know everything that's going on. Yet the pivot point of pivoting to Vortox has to be believable. It's so, there's so much. I love it.
We're going to move on to our BMR demons now to round out this week's episode, and then next week we'll come back with our experimental demons. First up of the BMR demons, and we're doing this alphabetically, is the Poe. The Poe's ability is, each night you may choose a player. Wait, that's different language, Milk. That's not what everyone else said.
It's not everyone the same!
Everyone else said, you choose a player. The Poe may choose a player. Wild. We'll figure out what's up with that. : They die. If your last choice was no one, choose three players tonight. So, the Poe is a lean, mean killing machine. And it can alternate between killing one, zero, and three players per night. If the Poe alternates every night between killing zero and three, that's obviously 1.5 kills per night. If it kills one, then zero, then three, that's 1.33 kills per night. And if it kills one every night, that's one kill a night. So those are sort of the three, I would say, basic patterns of what a Poe can be doing. Is the 1.33 kills per night pattern, the 1.5 kills per night pattern, and the one kill per night pattern.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to think about it, sort of. To step back and not just think about, okay, you're giving up a knight of kills. Although we should talk about why strategically that knight without demon kills can be an important part, especially on BMR, of playing as the Poe.
Yeah.
The ability to sort of fake other things happening with no deaths in the knight. And something we demonstrated on a previous episode of the podcast, where listening out for gossips and, for example, not killing on a night when there's a true gossip can hide gossip information. So I think there's a lot of other things you can do with the Poe as well.
Like, the Poe's sort of natural undercover man in the town is the minstrel. But that does, because the minstrel does a great job of covering up your Poe charges, especially when your minions get executed. But if the Poe is again, it's, I think, you know, of the BMR demons, I think there's two BMR demons that I think really do have the highest, the higher amount of strategic death, and two that have the lower amount, and the Poe is definitely one of the higher amount ones. The Poe needs to figure out when it can cover, when it can and when it should charge. It should charge on minstrel nights if it can. If you think your minion's going to get executed tomorrow, kill tonight. Charge after they get executed, because if there's a minstrel in play, that will cover your charge. Mm-hmm. Like, the Poe needs to be listening to gossips and figure out where the real gossip is. The Poe needs to coordinate with their assassin and see how the assassin can do to cover the charge. The Poe needs to, like, pay attention to innkeepers and fools. Like, you're going to be a pretty sad Poe if, like, you get your charge off, and then you hit the two players the innkeeper picks and the tea lady neighbor. you need all this sort of insight into how to maximize the three attacks that you get. and when and how to choose them, when and how to wait and use them. It's a very tricky demon to play, I found. And the choices of the ponies to make, they're all, like, the Poe, as I noted up front, like, the Poe has sort of three different paths it can take to set its kill pattern: the 030 path, the 103 path, and the 111 path. And it can, of course, switch through those throughout the game. Those zeros are always followed by threes.
Yeah. Or they will be, unless you don't find your innkeepers, fools, sailors, tea lady neighbors, etc. Right.
You're sometimes going to find those characters. You can't help it. And sometimes you want to. Sometimes you'll want to tap the fool. Sometimes you'll want to get that third kill on the goon so you can flip them evil as part of your, as instead of killing three people off. Like, lots of things you want to do as the Poe. Lots of things you want to cover for.
You can use your three kills as scouting, right? You can use your three kills to find those kinds of roles, those kinds of protection roles as well. And you can use that to direct how you try to make executions in the day, or what you send your other minions to do, right? What you send your assassin to go deal with, for example.
As I mentioned at the top, we have sort of our mobility demons, like our Fangoos and our Imps. We have our misinformation demons, our Vortoxes and Odashis and Vigor Mortises all fall in that category. The Poe is our first of our sheer kill power demons, and I think it's the most interesting of the sheer kill power demons, by far.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I think I really enjoy Poe for the requirement that it has for me to pay attention to the game. It really, you can't just, okay, I'm going to not kill tonight, and then I'm going to kill three, and then I'm not kill tonight, and I'm going to kill three, I'm not going to... I mean, you can do that. That's a perfectly fine thing you can do. But I think you're massively underusing the role if you do that without looking at what's on the grim. If you do that without thinking about what's on the grim and trying to listen for things like gossips and protection roles and stuff like that. So I just think...
If you just go 030303 every night with rotely, that's a great way to fall into the trap where your minion gets executed going into your charge night, into your three attack nights, mm-hmm. and you lose them to the minstrel.
Yeah. You really have to be aware of what's going on in the game. Maybe it's demons, Emma. Maybe demons just really start like in A or B tier natively, and it's really hard to not want to put this into... It's really hard not to.
I think the Poe goes in A tier. I think it goes with the Nodashi and the Vig.
I think it has similar, and it may be it that similar all, interactions, you know?
Yeah, it may be that all our demons end up in S, A, and B, and we don't have any C or D tier demons. Though, spoiler, there's going to be some that I'm going to argue go in C and D.
There's going to be C and D tier minions, or demons, but they're probably not going to be C and D tier demons today. Maybe. we'll see where we go.
All right. Well, now we're going to get over to the Pukka, the mighty Pukka, the most deadly of the BMR demons. Each night, choose a player. Wait, we're missing an asterisk just to start. Just wanted to flag that. They are poisoned. Hey, that's not kill. The previously poisoned player dies, then becomes healthy. So that's a lot of words. What the Pukka basically boils down to is the Pukka has to pick their kills the night before they happen. And in addition to getting to pick those kills, the player is poisoned, which is like sort of nice flavor, during the time when they're in after the Pukka attacks them until they die.
It's a unique ability on a script that has some roles that are self-protecting. Script that has a lot of ability, not information, roles, where it can be tricky to tell if an ability role did something or not. Like, how do you know if an exorcist hit a demon or not the night before it died, if it was Pukka poisoned, things like that. Chambermaid information getting disrupted. There's some cool stuff that can happen with the Pukka, especially on BMR. And it's the only misinformation. It and Goon, but it's the only sort of evil directed misinformation on.
Yeah, in the traditional sense, the assassin does in DA do a lot of heavy lifting to create other types of BMR specific misinformation.
It's the only droizen, then. It's the only drunkenness or poisoning on the script. Directed. Obviously, Goon does it too.
All right. The Pukka's whole thing is the Pukka, even more so than the Poe, even more so than the Nodashi, even more so than the Vortox, the Pukka needs to know everything about what's going on in the game to maximize its power. It needs to know where is poison going to look sober? Who is Town going to execute tomorrow? Because you don't want to waste your poison kill on someone who Town's going to execute tomorrow. Like, it needs to find both the mechanical and social through lines of Town, and it needs to grip its little hands on them and hold on for dear life and follow them wherever they go and make its kills in a way that's going to support those worlds, that are going to work in synergy with those worlds more so than any other demon, because the Pukka has to make its choices early. So you get one night where you don't have to think too hard about who you're going to kill. One night, because it's the first night of the game and no one's shared any information, no one's shared any social thoughts yet. But after night one, you need the Pukka's responsibility is simple. They just need to know literally everything that's going on with every player in the game and then make the best choice that they can based off knowing everything that's going on with every player in the game mechanically and socially. Simply done. Simple enough, right, Milk?
Yeah, it's super easy. You just have to, be omniscient, or maybe have a crystal ball, maybe borrow one from a fortune teller, maybe use cards. You can maybe use cards to divine the outcome of the Grim.
Obviously, you're not always going to know everything all the time as a Pukka. In fact, I'm going to say that you're never going to know everything all the time as the Pukka. But you do, as the Pukka, need to try your best, and you need, like, the Pukka demands the best Grim reading, the best social reading of any demon, I think. It really does.
Like, the kill choice is so much more important than any other demon. Like, where you put your kills the night before is so crucial.
No other demon loses deaths because a good player gets executed. Like, that is a brutal downside for the Pukka. Like, it's really tough for the Pukka when they lose deaths because a good player gets executed. Good players getting executed is what most demons want. But when the Pukka loses deaths to that, like, that just delays the Pukka getting to the end game and gives good more time to solve.
Your best option for a person to poison as the Pukka is the extremely common player with very powerful information or ability role who is not suspicious at all and is likely to share all their information all the time. No problem. Just find that person and just poison them every single day, and you'll do fine.
The Pukka is a character that rewards foresight. It's a character that rewards Grim reading. It's a character that rewards social reading. It's a character that rewards decision making. It's got everything you want from an S tier character.
Yeah,
is where I'm going with this.
We could just put an S tier. It's not easy, but it is very deep in terms of strategy. Your choices matter more than any other demon in terms of your kill selection. Your ability, like your ability direction is the whole thing.
Need to know things like, who is the sailor going to pick? Because if you want to kill the sailor, like, you go through their ability. So you want to make sure that you poison the sailor on a night they're drinking with a good, or the night before they're going to drink with a good player,
yep,
so that they'll think that they were drunk to the good player, which will make the good player look evil. Oh, it's such a deep, deep demon.
Yeah, it's very...
Let's move on to the Shabaloth. Now, if this was a flavor text ranking, a flavor of demon ranking, the Shabaloth would not only be an S tier, it would be alone an S tier. Everything about the Shabaloth, its ability, its art, its flavor text of Blarg Fatag Nimatan Noshu Guntha Mshik Nayu Flurg Shik is perfect.
Excellent.
Its ability is each night choose two players, they die. A dead player you chose last night might be regurgitated. This is just the brute force muncher of chomp, demons. Chomp. It's just trying to chomp through town as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
There's some things Shabaloth can do to sort of try to bully storytellers into not doing the resurrection. Like, pick dead players every night, intentionally sink kills so that you only ever get one kill off.
But if you're intentionally sinking kills so that you only ever get one kill off, you're not a Shabaloth, you're just a worse imp.
Yeah, like, this is just sort of the chew him up, occasionally spit him out of demons, burn through town as quickly as possible. That's what the Shabaloth is.
If you have two kills a night, why do you care if they get regurgitated? Who cares if the town knows it's a Shabaloth?
You just eat them again. Milk.
Yeah, just kill them. Just keep killing. Chomp, chomp, chomp. It's faster than the Poe. Just remember that. Faster than the Poe.
As we were saying
more
before,
deadly than the Poe.
The Poe... Well, the joke about BMR demons is they're all described in their almanacs as the most deadly of demons.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as we were talking with Poe, like, the Poe averages 1.33 or 1.5 kills per night. The Shabaloth averages 2. It just kills things. Kill things with it.
Minus one resurrection at some point in the game.
Yeah. Which is all where I'm getting at. Shab is C tier for me in terms of demon strategy.
I guess it has to be a little bit aware of who it's eaten and who might get regurgitated. I guess it has to be a little bit aware of things like the same things as the Poe, like gossips and stuff.
I didn't
like
put
that
it in D tier milk,
but yeah, I mean,
it's just munching through stuff. You're just trying to brute force your way through town. You're sort of one track like that.
I don't want to take away from the fun of that. Like, that's super fun. Like, just kill two people a night, chomp, chomp, chomp. Go through them like a weed whacker, and be happy that you're not having to do all the strategy that you have to do with Pukka. You know?
Yeah. Think about how awesome your flavor text is. Blarg Fatag, Nimmatan, No Shugumtha, Mishik Nayu, Flur Kashik, licking your giant fangs with your giant tongue. You're such a flavorful demon, Shabaloth.
So
be happy
much
being the flavor demon.
That's right.
You are the flavor demon. We love you for being flavorful.
Now go sit in C tier like a good boy.
I don't have much more to say about Shab. Like, Shab, it's hard to, it's like, as with all BMR characters, it's really hard to get them off of BMR. Shab is very hard to write for on custom scripts because of, like, the need for a town that can protect itself from the power level of a Shabaloth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It looks great there in C tier, Emma.
It does. It's so pretty down there in C tier, doing its C tier stuff.
All right. Well, that leaves us with our last base 3 boy, rather, I should say.
Yeah, of course, the deadliest demon on BMR, the Zombul. Each night, if no one died today, choose a player, they die. The first time you die, you live, but register as dead. So let's start, I think, with the big elephant in the Zombul's room.
Yeah.
The Zombul barely gets to kill players, right?
It's the whole demon thing. We talked about the whole language of demons.
And the only time Zombuls get to kill players is if town doesn't do their job of executing someone in the day, which means, like, the demon win condition is two players alive. Like, the demon wants people dying at day and night so we can get to that two players alive condition. Like, it's hard for a Zombul to get there because it only gets, it always loses either the day or the night kill.
Yeah, it's vulnerability is not killing, which is the thing that demons do.
And that takes away, like, it takes away a lot from the Zombul. Because the Zombul it's a harsh limitation, the lack of consistent killing. But that means that the Zumbul does have to make sure their kills matter more. It's so much more painful for a Zumbul, even than it is for a Pukka, for the Zumbul to lose a kill to a minstrel, or lose a kill to a goon, or lose a kill to a tea lady neighbor, or lose a kill to an innkeeper. Like, because it's not only that the Zumbul lost the kill, but it's when is the Zumbul going to get to recover that kill? It might be a while. So in that sense, the Zumbul, like, has to, you know, really know the Grimwald. They can't just kill haphazardly. They have to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, but unlike all of the other demons that we've praised for having to know that, the Zumbul's not going to get to use that knowledge very often. When they do, what they do with their kill is crucial, but
most they have of the to time make they're... it really count when they do.
Yeah, most of the time they're not going to be doing much in the way of choosing. Now, there's a lot of social hiding. There's a lot of sort of when do I want to get killed off the first time. That's all certainly interesting, but it's compared to a lot of the other demons, it's much trickier to navigate a Zumbul's game because you just don't have the ability to take out players the same way you do. And it's very heavily reliant on either Godfather or Assassin to be in play just so that it can kind of get a chance to get a kill somewhere that it really needs it.
But it's even more reliant on DA being in play so that the Zumbul can wake up and kill people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. So it needs to have... It needs a lot, is the problem. It needs players... It needs a whole bunch of protection roles so players don't die, but it also needs a whole bunch of players who can die when it makes its one kill here or there. And that's kind of tricky to figure out.
The other aspect of the Zumbul that we haven't discussed at all yet is its special ability, which is the first time you die, you live but register as dead. And that's, I think, where the Zumbul gets a little more interesting. The Zumbul, you know, they can be in a tough spot. When does it make sense for a Zumbul to intentionally die to, you know, try to blend in among the good dead? I think more so than any other demon that can die. So I think more so than like an imp cares would first be executed to get the demonhood to the Scarlet Woman than it does to start past them. More so than like the Zumbul wants the opportunity to die at night if they can. And the reason for that is like you'll be better off getting your social trust if you die at night than if you're executed.
I think that's absolutely right. And that now means spending your own kill, a Godfather kill, maybe something getting killed off by a gossip if the storyteller is, you know, being, you know, if you tell the storyteller you kind of want to get killed off in the night by a gossip, you might be able to negotiate that with the storyteller, but it's all very tricky.
One thing you don't want to do is have your assassin kill you. The assassin does not let you secretly remain alive.
That's
the assassin
right.
just kills you.
You die.
But something you can do is have your assassin bless grandmother and kill themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that is something that they can do to help you out so that you get two kills in the night. The assassin kills himself, you kill yourself, and then it looks like it's a Zumbul game. And hopefully, with so very few minions left, or so very few evil players left alive, the good team just eats themselves.
The Zumbul gains a lot from forcing the good team to burn votes. The evil team really wants to preserve their dead votes in a Zumbul game more so than other. They want the good team to turn through those votes on executions that aren't that important.
Yeah. Which means getting evil players killed is also advantageous to some extent. You do still want to have non-power, but getting evil players killed off is advantageous to some extent because it can pressure the good team into using their dead votes earlier. But again, it's all very tricky to navigate.
I do think the Zonbul... I think the Zonbul goes with Fengu and B tier.
I agree with you. Here. It's actually very similar in a lot of ways.
It's got more going on strategically than the Shabloth. I don't think it has as much going on as the Vigno, Dashier, Poe. It's a very tough demon to play well.
Yeah, it's hard to play well, and the strategy, unlike having limitations and forcing you to make tough choices, the strategy is restrictive in that you're not able to do enough you're limited to doing so very little that the choices you make are either incredibly powerful and very important, or they're very important and you didn't do enough with it and you lose the game because of it. And so, like, the binary nature of Zonbul choices, either it was a great choice that works out great for your team, or it's a terrible choice that does not work out for your team. The at least the feel of the binary nature of those choices, I think, makes it feel like there's not a curve, like there's not a strategic curve you can ride where, like, things are getting better, things are getting a little bit worse, okay, things are getting better. You're very much in like a everything's really bad right now. Oh, okay, I think that was pretty good, so I think we're doing okay now. Oh, nope, it's all bad again. It's really bad. So I'm inclined for B tier as well with the Fengu. I'm sorry, with putting the Zonbul with the Fengu, because I do think they both have some restrictions that make them less strategic. Emma, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Oh, okay, good. Just making sure. kind of wrapped up what I was saying there, which gets us down to the experimental demons. We've done all the base threes. I think we've got a great baseline here. I do think now that I'm looking at where we've placed these, and I'm quite happy with where we've placed these demons. And maybe a quibble here or there about really, you know.
Yeah, I think it's likely we'll adjust some of these demons down as we go through the experimentals.
I do think the separation between A and S is very narrow here, though.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Which is interesting to me. But as we get into the experimentals, I think we will fill out the lower ranks a little bit more.
I think we'll fill them out both through some of those demons will be lower ranked, and also some of the demons in A, maybe S, possibly even B, will move down slots to make a nicer curve.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right. So we will definitely have to see where we end up. Hopefully you've all enjoyed the strategy tier rankings of the first 9 demons. Will be 10 next time, and we'll have some fun continuing with this. This has been an interesting one, Emma. We've got an interesting puzzle here.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Well, until next time, remember to get in your entries for our final 3 con giveaway. That's at grimscenariospodcast@gmail.com. You can send in your stories of times when people were kind to you in a game of Blood on the Clock Tower. Until next time, may your scenarios stay grim.
Bye, friends.